So welcome to another edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. Joining me as co-host this week is Eric Elia, who is the VP of TV Solutions at Bright Cove. He spent most of his career working on broadband experiences and online video products and strategy at companies such as Comcast and At Home Network. And at one point, we actually shared a cubicle together at New Media Magazine back in the 90s.
So in the CD-ROM days.
Exactly.
The glorious CD-ROM days.
So this show will be, you know, this week has been all about, and I mean, as you know, I mean, when Rafat's hosted, you know, we talk a lot about cutting the cord to cable and how we get our TV shows and how that's changing. And this week on Media Shift, we've just had a full week just talking about cutting the cord and, you know, who's doing it and how to do it and, you know, why people care about it. And, you know, we're trying to take, even though, you know, today I have this manifesto for cord cutters and how, you know, really we should just be able to get, you know, in a perfect world, we should just be able to get the TV shows we want. You know, we shouldn't have to be force-fed 500 channels, et cetera. But we all know that there's a business model behind how cable and satellite works. And, you know, in order to provide us the high-quality entertainment, we have to pay, you know, $100 a month to get all these channels. That's always been kind of the thing. And so there are different views on this. And so we're not, I don't think we're taking kind of a monolithic view. I think that there are a lot of people who are tired of cable and satellite and tired of the high prices, but there's a lot of people who still stick with them. I mean, what's your situation now?
It's interesting. I was just laughing about this the other day. I just bought a new top-of-the-line Asus router to improve the signal in my home to enable the various different streaming devices I have around the house. My house is kind of a lab for this stuff because it's related to what I do for work, and I kind of enjoy noodling around with it as well. But I bought this new high-end router to improve my service around the house. And that was about $107 or $120 or so. And then I realized I shaved off about $120 off of my cable bill last year by dropping the HD DVR set-top box and paying extra for that. And that's essentially what I'm trying to recreate. And so
you're down to like a basic cable package, like a cheap essentials one?
Yeah, basically I tried to cancel the TV side of it, and I've heard this is somewhat of a common practice, but my cable company, which is Comcast where I am in the Bay Area, it would have actually cost me more to cancel the TV and only have phone and internet than it is to have all three services. So I kept the TV service, but it's on kind of the lowest tier of service. That's just basic cable and local channels. But what's also interesting in that is it does have an HD signal. I just don't have an HD box that I'm paying for, but I have a Mac-based DVR, the ITV adapter. Yeah. And all the not all, but the local broadcast HD signals come in really nicely into that.
Right, which varies, you know, according to where you live. Like some people can get excellent HD over the air. I get pretty good, but sometimes it kind of comes in and out depending on the channel. But
yeah, I get some of them, but not. I think the one I'm missing is NBC, and if you like, you know, that's one of the few. I think that network has some of the few things we watch off regular TV, and like 30 Rock and Parks and Recreation, and so we went through the cable. So it's interesting. Bought the ITV at $100-some, the new router at $100-some, and I've shaved off about $120 off of my cable bill. If I had just kept the DVR, I would have had better always on service, no switching inputs, easier to use for multiple people in the household, and probably with whatever promotional thing they would have given me, I probably would have gotten some HBO for a few months or something. So I think kind of backing up a level outside of my own situation, I think what's interesting is you know, the existing business model that is predicated on bundling a variety of networks together and selling it at a price point that that keeps what they call the ARPU, the average revenue per user, at a certain rate in the within the cable and satellite companies. That's what their stock performance is predicated upon, and their earnings and all of that. That's something that needs to persist, those subscriber numbers and such. And so I'm definitely seeing that kind of happen as an end user in the market. And the flip side is, while I'd love to just get, half of NBC, AMC, and some FX as mine, and maybe, one ABC show, and that's my lineup, to recreate that, and recreate it affordably and in a timely fashion, and with willingness to pay for it in the household, is actually still somewhat of a challenging proposition. And it's not, I would say it's not for the faint of heart or the average consumer yet.
Well, unfortunately, we had planned to have someone from Comcast come on to the show today, but they weren't able to make it. Well, I guess you will be our Comcast
Yeah, I'll
representative
be your
today.
Wah-ha-ha-ha.
Can you help me lower my bill?
Yes. Call and threaten to cancel.
Exactly. That's one thing that's just so weird. I just don't understand that whole. That's such a strange thing. That's like, you need to cancel. You need to call and threaten in order to get a better deal. I mean, think if that was in every other thing you had. Like if every other bill you had, you'd just be calling all the time and threatening to cancel. It's just it's almost like it's like a Arab market kind of strategy. Like you're walking away. Like I'm not interested in your service anymore. No, I don't want to buy this thing anymore. Like you're in the Arab shuk. Like no, I'm leaving. And it's like no, come back, come back. No. Don't leave, don't leave.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give it to you. Two for ten. Two for ten.
Okay, we'll throw in HBO. We'll throw in
Yeah.
this. We'll throw in that. So we'll talk about. Let's just go through all what we'll be talking about. We'll talk about Comcast is offering this new Xfinity Stream Picks, which is kind of their, people are saying this is kind of their Netflix killer, but it's kind of a streaming option, but you have to have a cable subscription in order to get it. It'll charge you either $4.99 a month, or it'll be free if you have a higher tier of service. And then we'll talk about just the in general cutting the cord to cable, why people are doing it. Is it happening in big numbers, or is it just a figment of everyone's imagination? And then finally, we'll talk about Google's fiber plans. Google has now people found that they're, there's been a lot of evidence that they're kind of trying to roll out kind of a cable competitor. They've put in some fiber in at least in Kansas City and might have a pay TV offering there. And there's a lot of kind of speculation as to what that's going to be. So we have a great roundtable of people to chat about all these subjects. So let's bring on the guests. So Ryan Lawler is online video editor and staff writer for GigaOm. He spent the last 5 years covering business, technology, and telecom-related subjects. Before joining GigaOm, he spent 2 years following online video and digital media trends at Constantinople. And prior to that, Ryan covered telecom infrastructure for Light Reading. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And Sam Schechner is a staff reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He's been at the Journal for nearly 7 years and reports frequently on how the internet is upending both the way people watch and create television. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have Jen Ettinger, who's the media manager for Free Press, a national nonpartisan nonprofit working to reform the media. She cut the cord to cable in November 2010 and hasn't looked back. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thanks for having me.
So we were going to have an executive from Comcast join us, but at the last minute, I think maybe he read the cord cutters manifesto that I wrote and decided this wasn't a good forum to be in. But I think you guys have talked to him actually, and have done. I know Ryan and Sam have done stories on this subject about Comcast and what they're offering with Stream Picks. This is a service that I believe is launching this week. They're going to charge $4.99 a month. On top of people, you have to have a cable subscription to get it. You can get it for free if you have a really high-end service and you're already paying a lot. And you guys have kind of termed this as something that's competing with Netflix or kind of keeping people from cutting cable to go to Netflix. I mean, what do you think the chances are that this kind of service can succeed? Do you want to start, Sam?
Well, I think Comcast has, at least in the near term, a lot riding on it succeeding. And it's not by itself. That what they want to do is make sure that all of your access to video online is somehow tied to maintaining this offline subscription that funnels a lot of money not only to them but to the media companies that make all of the TV channels and TV content. But a lot of people are showing that they're not interested in paying these bills, and they keep going up and up. And there's really not a business structure that exists that it's going to make it easy for any of these companies to pry apart their channels so that you can buy only ESPN or only Bravo. And so I think until there's a real rush to cord cutting, a lot of these companies are just going to offer these sorts of measures, these kind of measures to help along the TV bundle, but they're not going to break it apart in a way that's going to really appeal to consumers.
What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, well, I think that, it's important to note that this isn't a direct competitor to Netflix, really. I mean, this is just a way for Comcast to sort of, I wrote about this the other day, sink their claws deeper into the consumer. And if it means that the consumer doesn't pay $7.99 to get that, Netflix subscription, then, it's just sort of a way to fend that off in the short term. To Sam's point, really there is this consumer desire for, a la carte programming or at least smaller bundles, less expensive bundles that haven't been marketed or offered really to this point. And until we reach that, I think at some point the cable bundle is just going to become too expensive. I mean, it's the average ARPU is increasing about 10% per year for a lot of these cable providers. So until they get those prices or costs that they pass along to the consumer down or in line, I think at some point, the consumer market will reach a breaking point. It's just not clear when or how soon that'll happen.
And Jen, you're someone who cut the cord a couple years ago. I mean, and I did it as well. I know Eric would like to, but the cable company wouldn't let him cut his cord. What is this the kind of thing, this kind of service that Comcast is offering? Is this the kind of thing that might entice you back, or is it just going to be too expensive to go back to cable?
I think it's, for me, a bit too expensive to go back to cable. And what Comcast, I don't think, is considering here is that streaming is not the only reason people cut the cord to go to Netflix. People don't like them for customer service reasons. They don't like them for political reasons. So this effort doesn't address those causes.
And when you say political reasons, you mean just the fact that, they have a lot of times monopoly, duopolies, kind of control. And also, it's very hard. How do you get internet access? Because I know a lot of people have said, yeah, I'd love to cut the cord to cable, but, I'm still going to have to use them to get my internet access.
I actually tried to unbundle and it was going to be more expensive to unbundle, so I cut them entirely and I ended up going with a wireless service that we have here in Washington. And yeah, when it comes to political reasons, they definitely pour a ton of money into making sure that you don't have access to competition and cable providers and lobbying for policies that aren't consumer friendly.
Did you have any thoughts on this, Eric, as far as like this Comcast offering? I mean, you used to work at Comcast. Do you feel like this is something? I mean, what are they going to have to do to get people to stop cutting the cord, I guess? I mean, you found out, they do this thing where, you call and they offer you less. But is there something that they can do or offer to keep people?
Yeah, I'll touch on a few things that were covered, and I think to Jen's comment, I think in general the cable companies do not lobby in a way that prevents other people from building cable infrastructure and entering a new market. It's just completely cost prohibitive to do that sort of thing. There was a company a number of years ago called RCN that Paul Allen funded. I think they're now called Astound, where they still exist, that spent billions of dollars trying to do this. Really, the only kinds of companies you've been able to see build parallel TV infrastructure of late have been the telco companies with the sorts of resources that a Verizon and an AT&T have to build fiber at scale through neighborhoods. So it's tough to do that. But you know, back to your comments, Mark. It's it is interesting. I remember a meeting, probably 10 years ago now, when I was at Comcast, where a colleague talked about trying to introduce a product where you could kind of build your own package, choose the content, the channels that you want, and get some sort of a group discount for the number of channels.
So this is like an a la carte idea.
Yeah, it's kind of like a dynamic bundle almost, where let's say you took FX and you took ESPN and you took AMC, that would be, if each one were $5 a month, you could get them all three for 12 or something like that. And he was met with blank stares and almost kind of laughed out of the room that just the way the affiliate deals and content deals are set up, that made that a very tough thing for them to do. So, there are some economic challenges here that limit the ability to offer those sorts of things right now. But that's really just a classic kind of big business challenge, innovator's dilemma, where it's always most difficult to cannibalize your existing business when it's highly profitable for you. So I kind of think this ScreenPicks is a little bit of a hedge to some extent. It's a less dramatic step than, say, BSkyB is taking in the UK, where they are actually offering a complete new unbundled streaming service, and their position is wherever you get the content, we want you to get it from us. This shows that Comcast is ready to do that at any point if they saw fit to do it.
Yeah, Ryan, what's your take on ever getting the cable and satellite companies to break things up and give us kind of piecemeal, almost like on-demand approach to channels or to shows? I mean, do you think this is something that eventually these services are going to be able to provide before someone like Google steps in or Apple steps in?
I think it's going to be incredibly difficult when you look at how existing deals are structured. I mean, to that point, when ESPN does its deals, for instance, there's a clause with all the cable providers and IPTV providers, which says that, ESPN has to be on the most subscribed package of channels for, any of these providers' bundles. And basically that means that they have very little flexibility to actually break it out from, the bundle that most people subscribe to. There's been some experiments so far with different packages. Again, Comcast is doing this in certain markets where, you basically pay $15 for, basic cable, and then you layer on, sports content, regional sports networks for an additional $15 or $20. Then, you break up a package of lifestyle programming or sports or, music programming or, cable network programming, and each of those individually costs about $10 each. And so it's creating more flexible bundles. But at the end of the day,
they're still bundles. They're still you still have to have all the channels. Like, I mean, I guess it's not a technical issue. Like, if you just wanted to see your team or you just wanted to see one game, you have to have the entire channel forever, and you have to have a whole bunch of channels. That just seems backward in a way. Like, I think we now are, because of the internet, feel like everything should just be an on demand, give us exactly what we want. We don't want extra things thrown in our thrown on or added on. You know, we just want what we want.
Right. And to that point, I mean, as I said, you know, when ESPN or Disney negotiates a deal for ESPN, you know, they say, okay, well, you have to pay for ESPN and you have to pay for Disney and you have to pay for, you know, three other Disney channels that no one watches and include all of that. And by the way, you have to pay us for each of those. I mean, it's the same thing when you look at, you know, Fox or any of the other major media companies. You know, Viacom negotiates a deal for MTV and it negotiates a deal for Comedy Central, but then it throws on top VH1 and CMT and, you know, other channels that no one really watches. So it's, you know, it's very difficult from the operator's standpoint based on the contracts that they've negotiated to this point to be able to break apart all of that programming because it's written into their contracts.
Sam, did you want to jump in as well as far as what you're seeing when you're covering this space? I mean, what do you think about the efforts by some of the kind of over the top services? I mean, do you feel like, I mean, my other take is, I mean, I cut the cord, I get Hulu Plus, I get Netflix. I mean, you feel like you kind of have to cobble together a lot of other services to make it work. It still feels incomplete even when you do cut the cord. As far as trying to get what you want, you might get some of this, some of that. You might have to watch commercials. You might not. That part of the experience doesn't feel like it's really there yet when you cut the cord.
Well, I mean, and that's by design. I mean, the people who make this content, these large media conglomerates, whether it's Disney, whether it's News Corp, whether it's, you know, NBC Universal, which is actually now controlled by Comcast, their business model depends on people buying these bundles of content. The cable channels are the most profitable parts of all those companies. And, you know, half the revenue for the average channel comes from subscription fees. So if suddenly we were buying only the channels we wanted, a lot of channels would go out of business. These companies would make less money. They probably would survive. I mean, I'm not saying that it should or shouldn't be this way, but they don't want to sell the content that they think is the most valuable to these over-the-top operators in a way that they think will encourage people, or worse, encourage a new generation to never sign up for cable, because that's, I think, the real worry among these media companies. And so something like Take TV Everywhere, which Eric was mentioning, I mean, I think that is a really interesting effort. You know, one could argue that it's still essentially tied to the bundle. It's not breaking apart the bundle. It's trying to figure out a way to make the bundle somewhat more enticing. And in fact, add more to the bundle. So the over-the-air broadcast TV that's generally been for the past 5 or 6 years free on the internet the day after it airs, increasingly those media companies are going to delay it for a week and make it only available if you pay for the bundle, you know, on the internet. And, you know, it's they're trying to engineer the technology to put toothpaste back in tubes, and that's the business model, you know, while they're innovating around the edges. And then at some day it's going to switch probably. But not until, they're not going to break apart these bundles. To Ryan's point, Viacom, all these companies are not going to start writing contracts where you can put ESPN on some tier where you don't have to give it to everyone until they have no other choice. I mean, Bob Iger, if he tomorrow said, you know, for the good of the business, I'm going to start selling everything, Bob Iger, Disney CEO, I'm going to start selling everything individually. And, you know, in 20 years, our company will be much stronger and we'll still be around if we do that. But for the meantime, our operating income is going to fall by 50%. He would get canned. I mean, he can't do that. So these companies are constrained by their own structure from really doing too much innovation in this space.
But couldn't someone come along, like, let's say, you know, we don't really know what Google is going to do. They have these plans for fiber, to lay down fiber and kind of try their own parallel network. Mm. We don't really know what they're going to do, but, you know, could someone come in with very deep pockets and just basically go to the studios and say, you know, or to, you know, the top shows and the top content and just say, hey, we want to offer everything. You know, we want to offer the best of TV, the best of sports, the best of internet, and you know, make it a fair price for everyone, and you know, break apart the bundles. I mean, is it possible for some for a deep-pocketed innovator to do that, or is it just the contracts are so restrictive that Hollywood just won't play ball with them?
Well, I think it's more a matter of whether Silicon Valley really thinks content is that valuable. I'm sure there's a check that, I mean, they could, Google, if the government would let them, could probably buy most of the media companies with cash on hand. Certainly Apple could. But, you know, Apple doesn't have any problem selling iPads without having bought all that content. You know, they tried to put together their own smaller bundle. They were rebuffed. Obviously, if they paid enough money, they could get whatever they wanted. The media companies aren't, you know, they're just businesses. But I think what you're seeing, because there's two different questions. Could they take everything you want and pay enough to get it? And that's, you know, perhaps what's going on with Google Fiber, and we can talk about that. But there's the other idea of going straight to the talent, going straight to the studios, as you say, and spending money. And that's going to build up an alternative ecosystem. And that's what YouTube is doing right now. They're launching a bunch of their own channels, and that content is increasingly compelling. I mean, even the Wall Street Journal, we have a channel on YouTube, and we have our own free content outside the bundle, like a little ersatz cable channel. And, you know, for the people like you who think it's not good enough right now, if the media companies and the cable companies don't innovate quickly enough in a year or two, it might be good enough without them. And that's, I think, a bigger danger.
There have been a few interesting cases recently of some of the new service providers like Netflix and Hulu going direct to production companies and buying shows. So, you know, the most recent one is probably the Lilyhammer show on Netflix, which not only was it kind of a cable style show with one of the former stars of The Sopranos in a similar kind of role, but it was interesting in that they did it in a little bit of a different way, where they took all of the episodes and released them at once, so people could so-called binge on the content. Any word on either anecdotally or any actual official news on how that's done, and what the prospects are for some of this sort of direct purchasing of content?
Netflix has very specifically said, you know, that they're not going to break out ratings for the show. And part of that is just that, you know, they're playing a different game. They're playing the long tail game. So, you know, they don't have to release necessarily numbers for, you know, the first week or the first month or whatever. They're trying to just, you know, extract the maximum amount of value for the lifetime of, you know, of the content without having to necessarily worry about whether someone watches it at a certain time or within a certain window. So, I mean, even anecdotally, it's kind of difficult to tell how well that's doing. And Netflix definitely isn't going to comment on it. I mean, I will say, you know, I binge watched it, and I mean, it's kind of a goofy little show, but you know, it seems like there is a market for it over the long term, and depending on how the contract is structured, it could definitely still make sense for someone like Netflix to continue producing shows like this.
Yeah. Well, there's going to be more of it too, right? Not just, you know, another goofy little show I think is coming right to Netflix, which is Arrested Development, which is
True.
which is an interesting, you know, an interesting trend. I've long thought that, you know, one way we'll start to see content migrate, some of the holes in the, you know, in the dam, kind of on the existing models, will be with popular shows that are going off air and getting a second life, kind of on these types of services. So, yeah, there's more coming. It'll be interesting to see how they do.
For sure. And Jen, I'm curious, when, you know, are there things that you missed when you cut the cord? And I know you've been kind of an evangelist for some of your friends that have cut the cord. What kind of resistance do you get from people? I mean, are there things that you feel like, you know, wow, if I had cable, I would get X, Y, and Z that I'm missing now?
There's not too much of that for me, but when the resistance I get from my friends is usually, how do I watch sports? How do I watch HBO? And occasionally I'll get, well, what about, I watch The Good Wife on Sunday nights. And to those, I say, HBO, I get through DVD. I buy the season. It's much more valuable to me to own it. and to be able to watch it whenever I want than to pay a monthly cable subscription with an add-on to get those. And I'm always reminding people that a lot of the shows they watch on primetime television are free over the air, and you can access them with a simple antenna. You can watch them online the next day, and they're always shocked to find out that they don't have to have a cable subscription.
You can actually get HD channels with rabbit ears.
Exactly. So, and for sports, I'm a huge football fan, and I have no problem supporting local establishments and hanging out with fellow alumni to watch games. So for the most part, I do that. And there's the occasional game that I wish I could watch on ESPN, but I just don't miss it that much.
Yes, Sam, you helped with a story that the Wall Street Journal did about kind of rabbit ears making a comeback in this over-the-air, you know, just people getting stuff by broadcast. It's just kind of interesting that, you know, people don't even think about that, and they're like, well, I have to have cable just to get broadcast channels, and it's not true.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the cable companies and content companies are trying to build the walled garden walls even higher, it's missing a wall, which are those over-the-air signals, which have gotten a lot better since the change to digital transmission. I think that the thing that's missing for that to become a really consumer-friendly thing that could really take off and lead to a lot more cord cutting is somebody who integrates a really easy to buy device that has a DVR in it as well, so that you can record things and watch them at your leisure. You know, Boxy has an add-on antenna for live TV and mixing web video. If that had a DVR in it, or somebody rolls something out like that, Dish for a while was actually selling something like that, an over-the-air digital converter with a DVR built into it. You know, you can cobble it together yourself with TiVo, but you still have to pay them a monthly fee.
Right, and then there's iTV, which is, Eric, I guess you're using, and there's this new service, Aereo, which I guess they have a little mini antenna that they run for you, but then you pay $12 a month to use it. So,
also, I would get that while you can, because I think all the media companies involved think that does not comport with the law.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate you joining us for the show.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
thank you, Mark.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. I want to thank my co-host Eric Elia, as well as our roundtable of guests, Ryan Lawler, Sam Schechner, and Jen Ettinger. We also want to thank PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Be sure to keep up with all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, Idea Lab, at pbs.org/idealab. We'll catch you next week. Hater hates the world.